Well, so in college, I still worked out, but I had gotten away from it and had gotten more into some things I shouldn't have. You know, I was a heavy tobacco user. I was a heavy drinker because I had worked at a bar on Northgate for a while. I had reached a point to where I was sitting in Lane's Chicken Fingers on Wellborn, and I was thinking, like, man, I gotta stop this. This is, I'm going down the wrong path. I shouldn't be. This isn't something I should do. And they had on ESPN at the time, I think it was the first year they had the CrossFit Games on ESPN, or at least a rerun of it or something. I looked at it and I go, I need to get back into working out more regularly. This looks interesting.
Welcome back to the Building Better People podcast. This is your host, Charlie Lima. Today, I have Gus Warden joining me on the podcast. Gus is one of our personal trainers here at BoomFit. He actually started as a CrossFit member several years ago, and he has an amazing story. Enjoy.
My name is Gus Warden. I am a trainer here at BoomFit / College Station CrossFit. I am how old am I? 1991 was when I was, I'm 27 years old. I'm getting to that point, I guess. A fun fact about me, I guess, I am one of the biggest introverts you will probably ever meet in your life.
And that might be how you managed to not get on this podcast for 84 episodes. I can't believe we're just now finally getting you to here. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Of course. I like to fade into the woodwork.
All right, Gus, where do we start, man? Tell me, when did Gus, you must have been working out at birth. I mean, you are like a little fitness ninja. So,
not quite at birth.
would you consider your fitness journey actually starting?
If you consider fitness journey actually starting, then I guess, yeah, probably would be really early on.
Like when you were a baby.
Close. So my mom actually did a really good job of, keeping me and my brother healthy. She would always, and maybe it's not the best thing for a parent to tell a kid these days, but she would always tell us that she would never have any fat children, period. And so I remember growing up, there were times when if we wanted to eat lunch, she'd say, okay, Gus, Nick, time to eat. And so we'd come, we'd wash up, we'd sit down, and she goes, but first, run 2 laps around the block, and then you can have your food.
Like, how long were these laps?
It would take, for 2 laps, it'd take us about 10 minutes.
Wow.
So,
how old were you?
I probably started when I was around like 6 or 7.
And if you didn't run, you didn't eat?
No food. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So she would kind of hold things over our head like that to get food. Like, she'd say, hey, you have to go play outside for 15 minutes and then you can have dinner. Or, you know, like, hey, you need to do some push-ups or sit-ups before you get your snack. She didn't do that all the time, but like frequently enough that I remember it, you know.
And so were you dreading these things or did you enjoy them?
I was just kind of like, okay.
That was just part of the deal.
That was just normal. That's just what I thought as normal. I didn't care. Like, it was like, all right, well, I guess I got to go run to eat lunch. But I never questioned it. And I actually kind of took to it a lot more than my brother did. He didn't buy into it quite so much. Although to this day, he's not what I would consider in shape, but he's a skinny dude. He's like a rail. He's like 6 foot something, and or at least close to it. Maybe he's like 5'10". He's taller than me.
Wow.
But he's a rail. He's really skinny.
Have you ever talked to your mom about that now? And like, why did you make us?
No, I never questioned it.
Yeah.
It didn't occur twice to me. In fact, when I was in elementary school, I was the weird kid in 4th grade that would do push-ups before lunch because that's what I knew. And recess would come around, I'd be the one weird kid like running laps around the playground while everybody else is playing dodgeball or something. And of course, I join in later, but I do a few laps to start out with. And then right before we got called in from recess, I would do some push-ups on the playground. And again, that was just normal to me.
So did you just annihilate all the fitness tests in school when they started? Like the push-up test and the...
I mean, it's for what an elementary school record like
you means, are but, yeah. still the grand champion at whatever school you went to.
Probably.
So at what point did it become kind of a organized effort to exercise?
Probably when I started getting into club soccer a little bit more. I played soccer a lot growing up. My dad was the coach of our team when I was really little. We were called the Little Rascals after the movie. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Oh, just on at my house a couple days ago.
Was it really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so our soccer team was named
Kate
after that
Kate loves
movie.
The scene in the beginning when they – well, she doesn't love it, but she always gets kind of – when they kiss.
Yeah, yeah.
On that date on the boat. But, uh-huh. Okay. No, so,
yep. I'm tracking.
Little Rascals team.
Right. So my dad was the coach of that, and I guess that's when the organized athletics really kind of started for me, was that I played probably almost every other sport you can think of, but I never liked any of them. I did like, you know, basketball. Good thing I didn't do that. I'm still really short. I did baseball. I would just pick the grass out in the outfield. Track. I did that. I hated track. I did gymnastics. I actually, I guess for a lot of people who know me now, they kind of know me as having a gymnastics background, but really soccer was the big one that took up most of my childhood. I only did gymnastics for like a year when I was little, and I quit it. I came back to it later in high school and finished it out, but I didn't do gymnastics for a very long time when I was little. I had a knack of like quitting things pretty regularly, and then I found soccer, and my parents were like, okay, well, you're going to stay here, and you're going to stay committed to this. And so I did, and I did that for several years, and that took me up into high school. And I was doing club soccer at this point, and I was decent. I made the varsity soccer team in high school. I did that for about a year or two, and then I decided I wanted to go back to gymnastics, and that's where I finished out for high school.
How many years total gymnastics for you?
Honestly, probably only two or three total.
But in high school?
In high school, one. When I was little, I did one or two. I can't remember which. But I was that was one of the things I was actually really, like, one of the few things I can think of in my life that I was actually naturally good at.
And what led you to go back in high school? Because that just seems like kind of, you know, when you're older, it's like you don't think of, at least I don't think of people starting gymnastics in high school.
Most don't. For most of the guys there, it was something they had done from when they were really little too. But I'd always kind of had an itch to go back to it. And I just decided to kind of scratch it before I went into college because I never knew. I knew that I would never do it again.
Did you pick
that.
It up really quickly from the because you had the background in it as a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Just
yeah,
because
absolutely.
You were kind of built for it?
Both. So at that point, I've been fairly stocky my entire life, which is I helped out a lot when I decided to go back to gymnastics, and I took to it really quick. You know, I wasn't great, but for the time that I was doing it in high school, I made really substantial progress enough to where like my coach had told me that if I had started maybe just a year earlier, I probably could have made the junior national team. But that's just rings. I was terrible at tumbling. I didn't like tumbling. I didn't like going across. I didn't like doing the floor routine. But the rings I was really good at. The pommel horse I was pretty good at. And then parallel bars, I was really good at that one too. So that was fun. But that's my organized sport background. And honestly, I think a lot of it was influenced by my grandparents, both of who are nationally ranked triathletes. In their age division. My grandmother, I think, was in the top 10 in the nation for whatever age group she was in. And my grandfather was not in the top 10, but he was up there. And they had a game room that they called it the game room. It was really a garage they converted into the game room. But an entire wall of it, floor to ceiling, was nothing but third place and up medals that they had accumulated in there. And that I think, had a big influence on my organized sporting is I looked up to them a lot in that regard.
Did you ever do a triathlon?
I never did. I did a lot of like 5Ks and stuff like that, and I did some Spartan races here and there, but I never did a triathlon.
And then did you, were you hitting the weight room in high school, or was that something that came later?
No, so that came a lot later. Body weight exercises were predominantly what I did. That and running, and that's about it. But I did a lot of body weight exercises. I mean, there were days when I would do like upwards of 1,000 push-ups a day. And
wow.
So it was not a light volume of things to do. I never touched a weight. Well, I wouldn't say never. I didn't work with weights very frequently because I didn't have a gym membership. My parents said that we couldn't afford a gym membership, so I just did push-ups. And we had like a kind of like a small little weight set at home that I used occasionally, but not very often. So
what, I guess this is a different segment, but like you're a personal trainer now. How has all that background and not needing a gym kind of helped you in not just the way you train your clients, but also your online clients? Like, is that something that you think about when you kind of encourage people about not needing a gym membership or even helping people with online?
Like, has it, what influences it had in that? So I think the biggest one is that, you know, the misconception that you have to have a gym to be fit. And so I have that background, and so I can make a lot of workouts that people don't need to do at home. And I can also speak to the fact that a gym is not something you absolutely need in order to be in shape. So that's more so with like the online clients from a distance. Some of them like travel a lot, or they don't really have access to a gym or whatever. And I tailor a lot of workouts that don't even have any weights to them for that purpose. In fact, I'm working with a guy who's trying to go into the Marines right now, and that's a nice background to have because they don't use weights at all. You know, it's just purely running and push-ups and sit-ups and pull-ups, and that's it.
I think that's pretty cool how kind of that's where your fitness journey started, was just basically having, you know, space, which is all you needed
in your body, and that's it.
And creating workouts, and now you do that for a living. So
I did four things from the age of, I guess, 4 years old up to 17 or 18. And that was, I ran, I did push-ups, I did pull-ups, and I did sit-ups. I guess five. Sometimes I would do squats.
Yeah.
Never anything more than that. And my workouts consisted of usually just one of those things, but done over and over and over again. And that was it. And I would work up one heck of a sweat. So it, you know.
And would you say when you graduated high school, you were pretty fit, like as fit as you are now?
Probably more.
Wow.
When I graduated high school, I was in extremely good shape. I could run on end without stopping. I could do close to 40 pull-ups unbroken. And then I could do, I lost count doing push-ups one day, and I had gotten into the hundreds and I hadn't stopped.
And what year did you graduate high school?
2009.
And so that brought you to College Station?
Yep. Came to, Texas A&M in 2009 for, you know, school. And I actually joined the Corps right out of high school, which is the ROTC program at A&M.
And they make you work out, right? There's morning
workouts. Yeah, it's mandatory.
And the workouts probably were perfectly in line with what you'd been doing.
They're pretty much exactly what I had been doing. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty easy transition, really.
Did you like the morning workouts?
No, I hated waking up that early.
Oh, really?
Which is funny now, because I wake up at 3.
And so, basically you were sleeping in back then. Never
thought that. I'd always remembered in the Corps, I'd be like, I can't wait till I'm out of this so I can sleep in. And then I ended up waking up even earlier after I got out. So
when did your fitness evolve from those types of workouts to what you would call traditional bodybuilding or weight room training, if ever?
It did. And that was, so this is kind of where College Station CrossFit comes into the mix. I had, you know, been doing what I usually do, running, push-ups, squats, pull-ups, push-ups, all that stuff. Through the Corps and well into late into college. And then in, I think it was late 2011 and early 2012 is when I became an actual member here at the gym. And that's when I first actually started using actual weights. And that was, you know, of course, Olympic lifting and squats, not a whole lot of bench press, but that's kind of normal for CrossFit.
And I've heard you tell this story a few times, but I think it's worth sharing here on the podcast. But I think we had ring muscle-ups programmed that day.
Uh-huh.
And so tell us about that first, because a lot of people listening have no clue. They've seen you up here, you know, at the gym, but they don't know that you are a CrossFit member.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how you started at this
gym.
Yeah,
I drank the Kool-Aid for a while.
That's right. Uh-huh. And so, but tell me about that first workout.
Well, I forget what the actual work, I know it involved running and muscle ups, and that actually may have been it. And this was 2012, and so muscle ups and CrossFit were like the bear for everyone. No one could do them. Like, and if there was, it was like 1 in 100. And so it was like the gold standard. Everybody tried to do a muscle up, nobody could. But at that time, of course, I had a gymnastics background, and so, but nobody knew that. And I came into the gym, and Will Schaub was the coach at the time, and he actually took a poll of the class. He said, how many people here can actually do a muscle-up? Nobody raised their hand, and I was just kind of looking around. I didn't really want to be that guy, but...
And you had a shaved head.
No.
Oh.
Not okay. Quite.
Okay.
I had a mohawk.
Oh, that's right. I knew it was something.
Yeah, I had a mohawk. And I had like these neon, I'm sure I stood out like a sore thumb, but I had like these multicolored, trail running shoes that I had used when I was doing Spartan races. And I had a mohawk, like straight up shape, you know, side of the head was shaved, strip of hair running from the front to the back like a skunk. And, interesting character to say the least. So here I am in this class, and everybody else keeps their hand down, and I kind of slow, you know, the awkward raise your hand, but you don't really want to kind of thing. But I was like, I mean, I can do them. And so, and of course, you know, Will's skeptical, and you could tell he didn't really, he didn't want to put the rings up, because at the time, too, we didn't have the configuration we currently do. We had that that metal, welded together metal canopy with a red tarp over the top, and the only way you could do muscle-ups from it was if you got on the ladder, went to the very top rung, and, like, balanced precariously and strung the rings up, and you had to, like, put them up and take them down.
In other words, it was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work for, like, this new guy who God knows if he's actually telling the truth, and, like, you know. But anyway, he did it. He went up and he put the rings up, and you can tell he was kind of bitter about it, and I was kind of feeling bad, but, you know, whatever. And, so he did it, and I did the entire first set. I started doing them strict because that's what a muscle-up in gymnastics is you don't swing. You just go from the bottom all the way and pull yourself up to the top and press out. And, of course, everybody's staring at me at this point. And so I drop down, I do the run, and I come back, and he goes, that's not a muscle-up. And I said, yes, it is. That's a muscle-up. And he goes, no, you have to swing. I said, that's not a muscle up. I was like, that's a back uprise. And he goes, were you in gymnastics? I said, yes, sir. And he goes, ah, well, in CrossFit, that's not a muscle up. You know, yeah. And so I was like, oh, this makes it exponentially easier. And so I did the whole next set unbroken, and I kept going. And First CrossFit workout ever.
And what made you want to do CrossFit? Like, how did you even come about that?
Well, so in college, I still worked out, but I had gotten away from it and had gotten more into some things I shouldn't have. You know, I was a heavy tobacco user. I was a heavy drinker because I had worked at a bar on Northgate for a while, hence the mohawk. and a lot of other things I really shouldn't have been doing. And I had reached a point to where I was sitting in Lane's Chicken Fingers on Wellborn. And I was thinking, like, man, I got to stop this. This is I'm going down the wrong path. I shouldn't be. This isn't something I should do. And they had on ESPN at the time. I think it was the first year they had the CrossFit Games on ESPN, or at least a rerun of it or something. And I looked at it, and I go, I need to get back into working out more regularly. This looks interesting. And I had that Spartan race coming up. So I said, you know what? I'm going to finish the Spartan race, get through that, and then as soon as that's done, I'm going to go check this thing out. And so I Googled CrossFit in College Station. BoomFit popped up, and it was just BoomFit at the time. It wasn't College Station CrossFit. And so when I finished the race the next day, I came and instantly signed up.
You know, I was just meeting with somebody who has a son who's kind of in that, like, age where, you know, not making great decisions and kind of a little bit of what you're describing. And, you know, you're a living example of that. And I am too, like, how working out, you know, and it kind of points at building better people, right? Like, this whole idea of, man, we started exercising and it naturally just led us to just making better life choices.
Right.
So because you experienced that, how can you speak to that to somebody who's maybe listening? They know somebody who's kind of in that place, or maybe they're personally in that place. Where do you start? Like, because for you, like, it didn't happen overnight.
I mean, no, not at all.
It was a progressive. I mean, obviously, you, not that a mohawk, it means you're making poor decisions, but, you know, you.
I mean, for like, a, you know, you're, job.
You're
probably.
In a completely different place in your life today than you were absolutely. Then. So, you know, what can you say to that person who's either in that or love somebody in that place right now that maybe working out could help them?
So of course, when you get into something like that, be it whatever, drugs or tobacco or something that, you know, cigarettes, something, you know, that's not bad, not good for you. I was about to say not bad for you. That's not true. It becomes a habit. And once it's a habit, it's incredibly hard to break. And you couple that with like the addictive properties of those substances, and it's like almost near impossible. But I knew that I needed to make a change, and I knew that it wasn't going to be easy. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of step, not I guess in the wrong direction, is they think like it's going to be easier than it is. And the reality of it is it freaking sucks when you quit, because like, you got a whole lot of withdrawal symptoms that are reminding you every single day that another pinch of tobacco may be the best thing in your day, or another drink is going to be, like, you know, life-giving. And the reality of it is if you want to quit something like that, or if you want to make a change, period, you got to suffer a bit. And that's just the cold, hard truth of it. And you have to accept that you got to go into a place that you're not comfortable. You have to understand that it will suck for a little bit, but all change is uncomfortable. And once you come out to that other side, though, there you realize that there's no turning back. Like, if you like, because what I did was I flushed everything down the toilet. My tobacco, I did cigarettes for a little. I smoked for a little bit. Cigarettes, whatever other things I had in my my dresser drawer, all of it went down the toilet. And so I gave myself no option of doing it again. And then I said, okay, well, I need something to take my mind off of it. I'm going to go work out, because that's what I knew. And so I went to the gym, and that's what, and sometimes I would do workouts twice a day, because when it got hard, I needed something to take my mind off of it. And so you got to A, commit, B, understand that it won't be easy, and then C, just keep going, even when you're suffering, because that's when it matters the most.
Man, that's an awesome story, in just knowing that there are. I mean, that this is the world we live in. Like,
yeah,
chances are, if you're sitting in a room with 10 people, like, half of the people are struggling with something.
Yeah,
you know that.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're exactly right. It becomes a habit, right? And mm-hmm. And we self-medicate with whatever it is that we feel, you know. And sometimes, I mean, I'll be honest with you, working out is self-medication. But
it is.
In my opinion, it's a good way to.
But I'll take that over the alternative.
Exactly. And how long did you kind of stick with CrossFit? Because I know that we can kind of go into a little bit now of like when you became a trainer, but how long did you actually commit to the CrossFit program?
Probably about a year and a half.
And did you see pretty significant results in that time?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it was, you know, of course I got stronger because I started using weights. But really, again, the big benefit for me was giving my mind something else to do. And it was enduring. It was being around, you know, people that you could talk to. That's one of the big things about CrossFit that was so good for me at that time, was it was a community of people that you could actually talk to. It wasn't just like a normal gym where you could go and like, all right, these people don't really care who you are. You can go and you lift weights, but you make friends in the community, in the classes, and that's kind of what keeps you going back. And they're like, hey, you're going to be here tomorrow, or they'll text you or whatever, and they give you, you know, something that you can go back to.
And even for somebody like you described yourself, interesting fact, being an introvert.
I know I needed it.
It kind of forced you.
Had to.
And just like Jordan Monroe's podcast, which was a great one about 10 episodes ago, he basically talked about the best thing CrossFit did is it forced him to interact with people and be vulnerable.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's the best thing that it did for me, but it was certainly a huge benefit. Mm-hmm. It brought me out of my shell a little bit. To this day, I still, if I'm given the option, I will choose a book over a large group of people, but I've gotten a lot better, you know? But yeah, I mean, the best thing that CrossFit did for me was give me a community that I could go back to that would keep me accountable so that I could break those habits. I mean, because there's times in, like, you know, you're like sitting there with the cold shakes and sweats and like, it's not comfortable, you know?
And then, so what happened next in terms of the, when did you start personal training? How much longer after that?
So I think I started personal training probably a year after I became a member. Because Adam Edrington, who was the head trainer here at the time, he had found out that I had started, I don't know how he found out, but he found out that I had started a personal training course just because I was interested in fitness. I always have been. And so my dad had told me, well, why don't you just like get your personal trainer certification? And I said, okay. So I ended up getting that, and I was working on that at the time, and Adam found out, and he said, hey, man, we need personal trainers. If you finish your cert, you know, I'd love to have you come aboard. You know, all you have to do is talk with the owner, and then if he okays you, you're in. I said, sure, because I needed money at the time, you know. And so I finished the cert, interviewed with you, and somehow, some way, you gave me a job. I remember it was like a 10-minute talk. I don't even know if I'd classify it as an interview. I remember getting out of that and being like, dang, that was easy. Like, so, interview process has changed a bit since then, but thank God it was that easy at the time. Otherwise, I would have never gotten a job. So, yeah, that's how I became a personal trainer here.
And then shortly after, how much longer after that before you met Brittany and kind of because you guys now just had a 2-year anniversary.
Yeah, just yesterday.
And you proposed at the gym.
I did.
Which was really special on a Sunday.
January 10th is when I proposed, and that was in, 2018. We got married in 2016, so that means I proposed January 10th, 2016, in the gym because we met here.
And how long had y'all been together before that?
She's going to listen to this, and she's going to correct me probably. This question was posed earlier this year, actually, and I got it wrong, and I don't think I still know the answer.
You can throw a dart at the wall.
I think we had been dating for a year.
Yeah.
Maybe a year and a half. And then, but before that, we were just good friends.
And we had met so, here.
Yeah.
At this point, when you began dating Brittany, you were at a completely different place in your life than you were when you started at the gym.
For sure.
You know,
and
just continued to, and then you guys started your relationship, and you're at that time you're still training. And I remember, you know, you just bootstrapping your business and getting clients just by, you kind of reference at times your first paycheck.
Oh my God.
Because personal training is a commission, right?
It's pure commission. There's no salary, no hourly wage. And
now
you want me to tell that story?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well. Of course, Charlie pays us bi-weekly here, and I remember my first bi-weekly paycheck. So I had been working 2 weeks, and my first bi-weekly paycheck was $42. I said, this ain't going to work. $42 for 2 weeks. So I was averaging $20 a week.
You know, but now, Gus, you've come such a long way, man. So, like, you're giving our trainers advice on how to grow their business. You're supporting our team, not just on the personal training side, but on the CrossFit side and in a leadership way. When you think about that, why, you know, what do you know now that at the time led you to have a $42 paycheck, right? So like, this could be business advice for somebody who's sitting there struggling. Maybe they're not a personal trainer, maybe they are, but they're sitting there and they're call it what it is. They just aren't financially in the position that they want to be in?
Goes back to the exact same thing I said about quitting the bad habits. If you want to change, it's going to get very uncomfortable. I mean, if I wanted more than $42, it means that my highly introverted self had to go out and talk to people and say, hey, you should come train with me. Here's the cost. You know, I actually had to do what I said I was never going to do in my life, which was sell. And that, to this day, is one of the most uncomfortable things I can possibly do. But the fact that it is uncomfortable means I should be doing it, in my mind. If I'm not getting at least a little uncomfortable every single day, then I'm standing still, and that's bad.
So kind of what you're saying then is basically if I'm in a place, whether it's in my fitness, in my finances,
wherever,
in my faith,
you want to make a change,
and I aspire to have something more than I have, I have to get uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
And do some things that I haven't been doing.
And I mean, like, for me to like sell someone, like before I do it, to this day, I kid you not, and I do it pretty regularly now, but to this day, I get so terrified, I am like shaking in my boots, literally. And I start like sweating, and it's like, it sucks. But again, I'm also at the same time going like, sweet, this is what I should be doing. It's a weird kind of paradox, but...
And when you say it like you're describing it as selling someone, you know, do you view it just as selling someone?
No.
Okay, so expand upon that.
So in that situation, I wouldn't be able to sell something that I don't believe in. And what I believe in is that health is the best investment you can possibly make in yourself because it affects everything else. It affects your relationships. It affects your ability to provide. It affects your spirituality. Because if you're not healthy, then what are you thinking of? Your health. It's going downhill. You got to buy medications. Everything. Like, if you do not take care of your health, you cannot do anything else that you need to do as well as you need to do it. And so I'm able to convince people to invest in their health because I believe in it so strongly. But if you said, hey, go sell this guy like a car, I'll be on the street broke. Like, I can't do that. Like, because I drive a 99 beater, and I don't believe in upgrading to a new car because this one does the job just fine. You know, it gets me from point A to point B. I don't believe that you need a new car if it's running. Like, if the thing gets you from A to B, has no issues, you don't need another car. So I would not do well in that industry. Same thing goes for insurance. Like, I don't know anything about insurance. I know that I have it and I know that I need it, but I don't know how to sell it.
So it's the path to helping people.
Yeah, you gotta believe in what you're doing. You have to know that what you do helps people if you are going to be able to sell it.
Yeah.
Period.
So that kind of takes us to where you are now, and recently you kind of wanted to start powerlifting.
Yeah.
And that's been in the last, 6 months or?
Probably a little less.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you had originally signed up for a powerlifting meet. Schedule conflict happened because a concert you went with your dad.
Yeah, I double booked.
So, But are you going to continue to pursue the powerlifting?
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about that and kind of what led you to want to start powerlifting and what you're realizing or learning about yourself in the process.
So the reason I decided to do that was because I needed a break from my routine as I was getting comfortable. And if I am comfortable, like I just said, like I'm going in the wrong direction. And so I needed a new direction that I needed to go in. And I'd always kind of like, you know, growing up, I always wanted to be like, you know, Superman, you know, like super strong guy, like can lift a freaking tank and just like jacked, you know. And so let's be honest. And so that's always kind of been at the back of my mind. And my dad, who he was an incredibly strong guy when he was my age, he was able, you remember, so... Maybe you won't remember this. I don't because I'm too young. But for the Volkswagen Beetles, the engine used to be in the trunk of the car.
Oh,
it wasn't
yeah.
in front. Okay.
Yeah.
So my dad was able to lift the back end of a Volkswagen off the ground. Like the side.
Like Superman, basically.
Right. Like the end with the engine in it. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. I want to be able to do that. And so, and I've never really done it to where I've never really strength trained seriously. I did a little bit in CrossFit and stuff like that. And yeah, I like to bench press and like do curls, but I'd never actually tried to see how strong can I actually get. And so I decided to do a powerlifting meet to push myself. And like you said, a scheduling conflict happened, but I still plan on doing another one. And the reason why is because it scares the hell out of me. And again, for me, that's good. Like, that means I'm going in the right direction. It means I'm growing.
Have you kind of learned anything in this season of training that way?
Yeah. The human body is incredibly tough. I mean, like, there have been... It's training for a powerlifting meet, especially at the peak of it, when I still thought I was going to be doing the actual meet. Oh, my God. Like, I felt like I got hit by a Mack truck every single day. But, like... You know, I would get under the bar to, like, squat 405, and I'd be like, there's no way I can do this. Like, this is just going to crush me. And I'd do it. And I was like, wow, that's – I didn't think I could do that. Same thing goes for bench press. Like, my elbows even started to, like, hurt, just ache all the time. And I was like, you know, warming up with the bar, I felt like my elbows would snap. And but eventually they get warmed up, and I can do, like, 135, and then I can do – 185, and then I can do 225, and then the next thing I know, I'm doing sets of four for five sets at 285. And then we go up to three and then do a heavy single at like 315. And warming up, I would have been like, no freaking way I can do that. No. And so it showed me, like, the human body has only the limits that you think you can place on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the lesson that it's been teaching me. Now, this isn't something that I will sustain into my later years, probably, because I can definitely tell it, like, it'll take its toll. But while I'm young right now, I can handle it.
Yeah, and I thought an interesting piece was that you hired a coach.
I did.
And just being a trainer that you are, I mean, tell me how that thought process came and just the benefits of doing that.
Well, so I know that... all I know is what I know, and what I don't know is anything about powerlifting. And so I did. I hired a coach. His name is David Wilson. Incredibly good coach, too. Highly recommend him. But he is actually an elite-level powerlifter. He's nationally ranked. I think he's, like, fifth in his weight class in the nation. And he's actually local. But really cool guy, and he pushed me. And that was the biggest benefit of it is, again, like, I was like... There's no freaking way I can do this. And he goes, you know, just get under the bar. He didn't say it quite that nice, but, he got me underneath it. And really, like, the programming and stuff, yeah, that's all stuff that I probably could have done myself. But the benefit of having him was that he pushed my limits. And that's what I was going for.
I just love how trainers can benefit from trainers. You know, absolutely. I work out in our classes. Mm-hmm. And having a coach is awesome, you know, especially when I'm doing a high technical movement and they can see things that I can't see.
Right.
And even, like you said, the words, right, their encouragement, their correction,
yep,
all those things can actually pull a better version of us out of ourselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Just like what we're doing for others.
Yep. And I know that. And that's why I pulled the trigger and actually hired him. And it was a huge benefit, like... And to this day, like, that even opened my eyes as to how important having someone in your corner actually is. Like, that they're there to say, hey, you can do this. Now just get under the bar and squat or whatever it is. Or maybe it's, hey, go run the extra lap. You don't want to do it, but, like, he's sitting there watching you and you're like, I'm going to look like such a, you know, wimp if I don't, you know,
like, you don't want to let your coach down.
Right. Exactly. And so, and it really all it amounted, and I got really strong, really quick. And, really, like, I've told this to my clients before, but I think it's a superpower to be able to take what someone tells you and say, okay, and just do it. Like, it's so rare. I like to think that I have that, and the reality of it is most people don't, you know, they overthink it or they try and complicate it themselves and, like, well, I heard this or whatever. And they talk themselves out of doing it or doing something completely different and going against what was told, you know? And so even if I didn't agree with what he said, and there were times that I did, I would just do it anyway.
It's submitting, right?
It is.
To the position that you've given him as your coach.
Right. Because I did it. You know, A, I was paying him, and B, you know, he knew what he was doing, and I knew that, And so I said, okay, well, I don't really agree with this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And it was to my benefit.
I think that's fascinating how you call it a superpower, because it's humility. And the obstacles are pride, right? So we think we can do it better.
Yeah.
Or we mm-hmm. don't want to submit, right?
Right, right. I mean, it's crazy. Like, and that's in anything. If I'm like reading a book or something or whatever, I try and like find one thing that I can apply and actually do.
It's awesome.
And then I do it. And it, you know, shocker, it works. But For some reason, it's just such a rare quality, and I think that that's like one of the biggest obstacles people face is just they can't say, okay, I'll do that even though I don't agree with it.
Mm. So last question is the one I ask everybody on the podcast, which is, you know, the title of the podcast is Building Better People.
Right.
At the gym, that's our core purpose. That's why we come and do what we do. That's why we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's why we, you know, make phone calls. That's why we, you know, get uncomfortable. So how is that true for you? How has exercise, fitness, health made you a better version of yourself?
Oh, a lot of ways. But if I'm going to pick the one defining thing, then it would be, It has forced me to become uncomfortable so that I can grow and find myself. It's a constant reminder that getting uncomfortable is what needs to happen, because that uncertainty makes you feel alive.
Thank you for tuning in today. Don't forget to subscribe to the Building Better People podcast, where you will hear more stories of individuals being positively impacted by living a healthy lifestyle.